busy at the last minute after months of not hearing much back from anyone in terms of like job seeking. I had 3 interviews in 3 days.
Wow.
And it was just like on Monday, people were like, please, please, please interview with us right away. I don't know what's happening. I know sometimes companies like to hire to match up with the quarters. So like they'll hire you to start on September 1st so that their accountant has an easy time of it. Good news, you know, getting out
That's
there with
great
stuff.
News.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's been lovely. I'm sure our listeners from coast to coast to coast have had a great weekend this weekend. I'm going to start off. I was very jealous of our friends, and I have at least one friend, in St. John's, Newfoundland. We saw great footage. We've mentioned this Pride Parade a number of times. Of course, CanQueer, here we talk about gay news from across Canada and the world. And we have mentioned St. John's Pride numerous times because they chose to honour a pro-Palestinian group as their Grand Marshal during this year's parade, them and several others. We have previously reported, shared with our listeners, that Toronto Pride, New York Pride, I think London, UK, and a number of others have been disrupted at different points by pro-Palestinian groups, really trying to bring into focus their objection to the inclusion of corporations in Pride, the corporatization of Pride, which evolves into pinkwashing. We might get into that a little later. The inclusion of unsavory politicians or politicians that have not been overly supportive of the community, and so on and so forth. But they are being protested left, right, and center. So our protest march is itself being protested by our own protesters. It's like protestception happening for Pride at the moment. But yes, St. John's, I believe, from what we've seen, they had a lovely time.
All that just to say they had a lovely time.
Yeah, and I think it's important. You know, we talk about the you know, the big picture politics and, you know, what have you. But hundreds of people got out and marched. Everyone was smiling. The banners for pro-Palestine marched and everyone was behind them. Yeah, everyone had a good time. Oh, from what we can see. Likewise, we heard that a lot of folks, and I also have at least one or two friends in Halifax. I'm not boasting, but you did question the existence of my friends last week. But no, we have a couple of friends in Halifax, and although I haven't seen how their hot take on it, Halifax Pride also happened this past weekend.
Right.
It reminds me, I had a conversation with a leader of a air quote national nonprofit.
Okay.
And this national nonprofit said to me, "Oh, you know, Pride is Toronto. Pride is June. Pride month is June. It's June.
Yes.
And it is true that the sort of designated month, I think the designated month came first out of the States, but really, you know, it that they have picked June for that reason. Toronto Pride is in June.
June is peak Pride for sure.
A lot of them happen around that time, but it sort of negates the distinctly queer Canadian queer history that exists outside of Toronto. And very often, these small towns, villages, and locations, like, there's a good reason why Halifax is in the middle of July. Our gay radio show is going to keep mentioning them as they come up, so brace yourself.
Right.
Just because we're out of June doesn't mean we're done with all the prides.
Right.
But yeah, so I wanted to talk about Halifax Pride because they've done something quite interesting.
What's this?
They are also big fans, pro-Palestinian, big, you know, very much advocating for the end of this war, very keen on it not happening anymore.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are on board with that.
I don't think you need to be pro-Palestinian to be anti-war. I think this is more like pro-civilian, if anything. Like, it's not even about... Like, I would not say that I am pro either country. I am pro people who are not actively engaged in war not getting bombed anymore. Like, that's what I am pro.
Yeah. I'm pro not bombing schools, hospitals, campsites with refugees. I'm really pro not bombing those things. Which is a crazy statement that we have to make in 2024, but there we are. Anyway, moving on. The reason why I want to bring it up is because Halifax Pride was also briefly interrupted by pro-Palestinian protesters. Now, they had been doing some consultations, some trying to figure it out. They were still parade almost over. It's sort of the last oomph of the parade. And they're briefly interrupted, protesters come in, and so on and so forth. But one of the things that they're looking at is they released a statement. Pride Halifax released a statement to me, but they released the statement, and we'll jump to a song in a minute, and I'll find it, and I'll get the details for you. But one of the things that they did is they released essentially the list of expenses. It costs about $500,000 to run Halifax Pride. It's not cheap. It's not cheap. And the reason why I bring this up is because TD Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank, is on the divestment list. But they explained why. It's because they hold shares in an arms manufacturer. So the bank holds shares in an arms company, which is creating arms that goes into this conflict. So it's like, okay, I mean, okay, I get it. I get it. But the highlight here, the what Halifax Pride did, is they revealed that TD, Toronto Dominion Bank, is about 9% of the sponsorship value that they have from sponsorship revenue. It's a pretty decent chunk of change is
Yeah,
coming
that's
just.
not a small amount.
Exactly. Now, a lot of the pride organizations are umming and ahhing about, do we not invite certain companies? We talked a couple of weeks ago about a company that was said that they couldn't have the Pepsi logo, again related to this conflict. As a result that they pulled out, no one, as far as I'm aware, has as of yet told TD to take a hike. I have not heard from any pride that they have not invited the money or they've declined money from Toronto Dominion Bank. Have you heard any whisperings or mutterings about that?
No, I've not read anything or seen anything. I mean, nothing specific to this, because for a while now, people have been sort of whispering in the background of being frustrated with the whole Canada Pride equals TD for quite some time. And a lot of that really just comes down to the fact that the there's a clause in a lot of the agreements between TD and the various prides across the country that if they accept TD as a bank sponsor, they can't accept other banks as a bank sponsor. So they kind of locked that in by getting there early and outbidding everyone else and sort of cutting other people out. There, it's kind of, on the one hand, it's a little bit unscrupulous, but on the other hand, from just like a business perspective, if you're to be cynical about it, they're doing exactly the right thing to do, because if they're investing in pride purely as a form of pinkwashing and advertising, then that's how you would do that. You would advertise yourself and you would lock out everyone else. I mean, pulling up the ladder is a standard marketing procedure, even though it's kind of a butt move, it's how it works. And the talks around, if we're going to be accepting money from banks at all, why would we accept this specific process of being locked out of making TD the sole sponsor? Like, there's a bunch of shady business deals going on that people have been complaining, well, not complaining about, because it would be a little bit more overt, but people have been sort of talking about it in the background for quite some time now. It's kind of hard to point your finger to it. It's just as a former board member talking with other former board members, because I wasn't actively engaged with the national level Fierté Canada Pride. You were a lot more than I was, but even then, I did meet people from Fierté Canada Pride when I was sitting on the Ottawa board. And I do remember talking to people about the TD deal and what should be done about it. And at that time, the whole thing was sort of like shrug emoji. But now it really does seem to be coming to a head of how did we let this happen to us kind of a situation.
I mean, it would make for very difficult decision making.
Yeah.
I found the statement by Halifax Pride. They released a bit of a they released a transparency report. I honestly think more prides, more organizations should do this. At a quote, since their election in October, Halifax Pride board and staff have spent their time engaging in internal conversations around our public support of a free Palestine, our engagement with sponsors, and anti-pink washing practices. In response to community feedback, we have created the report to summarize the mentioned and so on and so forth. We talk about sponsorship, tracking, pick one in statement. What I'm going to highlight is they sort of share what they look for in sponsors and
Okay.
where the expenses are coming from. About over half, 52%, is the cost of running the actual event. It's a pretty big mark of it. 22% of their expenses is staffing
Okay.
to make it possible. And then we've got 4% marketing, 10% administration, rent, website, etc. And then community outreach is 12%. So think about that. Community outreach is 12%, administration, rent, website is 10. And then we look at TD sponsorship. It's about 9% of their income is TD sponsorship. So
Okay.
where do you cut that? Do you do no marketing? Do you let someone go? Do you have a festival that's a day shorter? They've got a decent mix. About a third of the money comes from the festival itself, about a
Okay.
third from government grants, and then the last third is sponsorship. It's a pretty even mix of it. But what they've committed to doing in terms of how they move forward is they're going to be trying to work with partners, specifically organizations. I think their push is for local ones. They've got things they're striving for. I'll quote it here: engaging in open, accountable, creative ways of funding options that are not on the divestment list. They also say opening community conversations about it, updating their policies, and then working with performers to understand their obligations as well. So nothing overly concrete, but
Right.
this is the first measure or the first time I've seen a pride organization tackle that issue of pinkwashing and the corporatization of pride, not just head on, but in a very transparent way. In a way that says, look, this is where the money goes. This is where the money comes from.
Right.
If we start being very specific about who we will and will not take money from, that needs to be balanced on the other side with what we will and will not do.
I mean, I got two things to say to that. First of all, as a not-for-profit, public, community-run organization, their books should have been open like this, basically right from the start. Like, this is maybe not necessarily posted online, but if you go to the annual general meeting to get that breakdown, like this kind of information should be publicly available. Some organizations are pretty liberal with it, and others, for some reason, are very tight-fisted when it comes to their financials. But an organization like this, it probably should be more open. And the second thing I would say is there was a time before Pride was corporatized where it had no problem raising the money. And I think part of the issue is that the way that they used to raise the money, people started making arguments for why that was unsavory. And I think it should just be revisited. It used to just be that there were, because now it's an issue of what does Pride actually organize versus what does it facilitate in the community? Anytime you see an event for, like, lesbian hiking or a bear Scrabble night or something like that, that's a community-run organization. Usually the fair, the parade, usually one gala, and maybe one other event, like a family picnic or something like that, are actually organized by Pride. And then otherwise, it's all community-run. It used to be that a lot of prides, and this is mostly Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal used to do this, but also, like, if you're talking 20 years ago, those were mainly the only prides. They used to also do a fundraising event. And those fundraising events were often accused of being mostly catering to white gay men. They had very expensive ticket prices. And the way that they supposed, well, they kind of did cater mostly to white gay men, was it was basically just a circuit party. It was a large diva dance house party. In a sweaty nightclub that was dim with a laser light show and maybe a fog machine. You get a famous DJ to come in to do a set, and the whole thing is like 16 hours long, and it's $90 at the door. And because it broadly only appealed to gay men, or even people who were not gay men who went felt out of place, and because of the high ticket price, it was kind of seen as exclusive. But at the time, I remember people were arguing, like, look, if you're going to say that gay white men have all the power, privilege, and money, use that. Like, that's the whole point of this, is to make an event that says, okay, well, you have all the power, privilege, and money. We're going to cater to you to milk the hell out of your disposable income and use that to fund other events that are free and open and catering to events that are not for gay white men. It was like the only event for gay white men. The only events that did specifically cater to gay white men were the ones with the ticket price, and they were the ones that were incredibly expensive. All the other events were free. So, I mean, yeah, there's potential issues with that, but that general model of, like, it doesn't have to be a circuit party that it didn't even target gay white men. It just mostly only appealed to gay white men. But still, it's like through the structure of the event. You can have other events as well that are fundraising events. Really, what I'm trying to say is bring back fundraising events and actually
Let's
just
dive
say,
into that in more just after our first musical song. This is Gas Station Affair by Demis Ellis. We're going to be touching on fundraising for Pride. I think you've really hit a nail on the topic there. Just after this, as I said, this is Demis Anderson. Sorry, Demis Ellis with the Gas Station Affair, and we will be back just after this. Something's coming up and I can't. Welcome back to Kangri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And before the break, we were talking about a bit of a bold move from Halifax Pride, mm-hmm. where they are tackling the issue of pinkwashing, which is, just for a quick explainer for our audience, we've mentioned it a few times, it's not washing your car with nice pink bubbles. It is actually the process where a company with maybe a spotty or not great track record diverts attention away from that by supporting the gays. Now, it could be a track record on homophobia. It could be a track record of bombing civilians. Either way, they support the gays and distract you with nice, pretty glitter and sunshine.
Well, it's that classic meme of how a lot of corporations will change their logos to include a rainbow, but not in every country.
Exactly, exactly. It is the Jane Essence Hall look over there of corporate engagement.
Right.
It's a nice Drag Race reference that you wouldn't get there, Sebastian. Okay. So, but I wanted to come back to the topic because you were talking about how Halifax Pride sort of revealed their sort of breakdown of where the money is coming from. And one thing that I think sort of is evidently missing from that is, you know, they've got the festival income, sponsorship grants, other sponsorship, but fundraising is fundamentally missing from that equation. And I wanted to give context here in terms of the big Canadian picture, all right? Older generations have, and I'm talking boomers, Gen X, we're talking people who are 50 plus at this point,
right?
And then some. They have, as a group, as a people, they donate significantly more, was significantly more of their disposable income compared to millennials, and even more so compared to Gen Z. They're just like our generation, like my generation and younger, simply are not donating to anybody. of any particular amount. Like, and there is just that spirit of giving exists less with these generations.
And it's not just because they're younger and have less disposable income, because if you match them, like how
income
much
level did, to income level, it's still a lower rate of giving.
How much did boomers donate when they were 24? How much did Gen X donate when they were 24? That amount per cohort is going down.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It is, it's across the board. So Canadians are giving to things they care about less. Which puts these nonprofit and all of the pride organizations that we refer to, you know, St. John's, Halifax, etc., they are all nonprofits. They are governed by board of directors or societies. The membership of these nonprofits is typically open to the public. You can pay, you can join. It's nearly always gay folks in the community or queer folks in the community that join. So it is a organization that represents local people in the community and their interests, generally speaking, broadly, a broader scope here for a conversation on a national scale. But I bring it up because although we see pockets of people who give 110%, they run for the board, they help to organize, they do this, that, and the other, it is so much pressure when there isn't a village to support them in terms of giving the support as a community to make these things happen. That's why we saw, you know, events in Fredericton cancelled over safety concern, following by the board just, it frankly just fell apart from the stress and the pressure and the expectations on them. We'll touch on what happened next in Fredericton a little later in the show. But I wonder, Sebastian, this is sort of my long-winded way of going about this. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, people that are supplying arms to a conflict that bombs civilians in kindergartens probably shouldn't have the logo on the Pride Parade. Like, that's maybe, that's a reasonable assumption to make. But then who pays for it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is Pride important enough to you or to me or queer folks listening to actually want to donate to support them? Because fundraising has fallen off a cliff for these organizations.
Well, there's different kinds of fundraising. One is just give them money. And another one that I actually strongly prefer is something like, well, like the Black and Blue Festival, Black and Blue Party in Montreal. It's a circuit party. It's your basic, sweaty gay man pit kind of event, lights down, a stadium that could fill 4,000 people. You put 2,000 people in there, and then they all squeeze into enough space for 100 people. Like it's really crushed in there. You get a DJ, laser show. It's also, this is an event that if you sold tickets for $50 a piece, you could pay it off, but they sell them for $120 a piece. And the reason why that difference in cost is sort of acceptable is because after everything's paid off, the profits go towards HIV research. So would you go to an event that would be $10 at the door, but instead is $40 at the door? So long as that extra money goes towards pride. And I think that's the kind of thing that a lot of people would be okay with. So long as you're putting on something where it really just has to be worth $10 at the door for people to be open-minded to going. Because I've been to a fundraising events where you pay your ticket price, you go in, and you're like, I know that most of the money is going to the not-for-profit, but even if this costs $5 to put on, this is not a $5 event. Like it can be disappointing, but it could also just be things like selling swag, selling, I don't know, a subscription service of some kind to get, I don't know, shaving products. I don't know. Like there's always something. Fundraising doesn't just have to be, they cold call you and say, are you willing to give us money for nothing? And I feel like some of that creativity has evaporated, and I don't know, or they integrate fundraising into Pride and not realizing that this is the kind of thing that used to be done year round. So the fundraising event for Pride, the thing that I said before the break, where Toronto used to have that big party, that was usually in the spring, early spring. So it'd be March, April, you would have a huge event like that, and then that profit would go towards Pride, and then whatever fundraising they managed to do throughout the year, that would determine the scale of Pride. And this was sort of, in the 90s, 2000s, maybe the early 2010s, before corporate sponsorship and federal grants and federal funding, or even municipal funding quite often, a lot of that wasn't even available yet. So it was fundraising or nothing. And people adapted, and people had really good fundraising events and really good fundraising ideas. And I think some of that may need to come back of just, summer pride is the pride where everyone's welcome, and most of the events are open doors and free. And maybe you have a little smaller winter pride, which is all just a mid-year festival where everything has a ticket price and the profits for that pay for summer pride. That you could have solutions like that. Somewhere like Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver could easily pull that off. And these are the places that have the scale of event where they need the funds to be able to do that. And if you're not going to get TD money, then you're going to need to have winter pride fundraising event money. Like that, you're going to have to come up with some kind of an alternative. You got to get creative with this kind of thing. So I think this is what